Running a learning business today requires attention to growing reach, generating revenue, and demonstrating real impact, all while navigating constant change and fierce competition for learners' time and money.
To help, we've curated a collection of free resources for learning business professionals. You'll find frameworks, briefings, and reports, webinars, and tools focused on strategy, portfolio design, pricing, marketing, and more, all created specifically for organizations that sell continuing education and professional development.
If you care about building a stronger, more sustainable learning business, visit leadinglearning.com/free resources.
That's leadinglearning.com/free resources for practical tools and strategic insight to help you grow your reach, revenue, and impact.
If you want to grow the reach, revenue, and impact of your learning business, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
We all know that decision-making is part and parcel of what any organization has to do, and strategy is ultimately about decisions, what to do and what not to do.
And we believe that data can be helpful when setting strategy and when making decisions. That's why we've annually surveyed learning businesses for the last several years, and it's why we want to devote this episode of the Leading Learning Podcast, number 469, to sharing data from our most recent survey to help you as you begin 2026.
We think this is a useful set of data to help you have internal discussions and make some decisions about where to focus and invest. So let's jump in.
The data we're sharing is based on responses to an online survey we conducted in September and October of 2025. We received qualifying responses from 156 learning businesses. We also put out a report in December 2025 based on survey responses, so we encourage you to check that out. And you can find the link in the show notes at leadinglearning.com/episode469.
And the report that you just mentioned, Jeff, that draws specifically on the responses we received from association learning businesses. Of the 156 qualifying responses from learning businesses overall, 107 came from associations, and associations were the largest grouping of respondents. Other responses came from commercial training firms, charities, learning businesses embedded in academic institutions, and others.
Let's start by looking at the data around strategy. And that's where the survey started. And part of why we started the survey by asking about strategic goals and drivers is because we believe strategy should be driving what you do. We asked two questions about strategic goals. We asked a question about what's your primary strategic goal for the year ahead, and then we asked what's your secondary strategic goal for the year ahead.
And we offered seven predefined choices along with a I don't know and also a something else answer option, and then folks could fill that in, and respondents could choose one answer.
So for primary strategic goal, what was most selected by a pretty good margin was increasing revenue. 29.5% selected that.
The second most popular response was strengthening alignment with workforce needs. 21.8% of respondents selected that as their top strategic goal. So that was about 8 points lower than increasing revenue.
And the next top responses were enhancing learner engagement. That just barely beat out growing enrollments and registrations, both at around 17%. So those were the top. Those were the primary strategic goals that folks picked.
All of the other options, like I said, we had seven predefined options. All of those were selected by under 10% of respondents. And so the four we just mentioned, increasing revenue, strengthening alignment with workforce needs, enhancing learner engagement, and growing enrollments, those four sum up the primary strategic goal for the majority of learning businesses responding to the survey.
And we also asked about secondary strategic goal, same answer options as for the primary goal. 22.6% selected increasing revenue as a secondary goal. And when you put together those who chose increasing revenue as a secondary goal with those who chose it as the primary one, you get a majority of respondents saying revenue is a top strategic goal.
Yes, and I think that's a clear takeaway from the data. Increasing revenue is front and center for learning businesses in 2026. Now, after asking about those primary and secondary strategic goals, we also asked about strategic drivers to get at what's behind those goals and why learning businesses are focusing on those goals.
And for this question, respondents could pick all that apply from a list of 8 named options plus a something else option. And the top choice was a need to increase financial sustainability or profitability. 63.6 chose that as a strategic driver. And of course, that pairs nicely and appropriately with the top goal of increasing revenue.
The second most selected driver, chosen by 57.1% of respondents, was to be seen as setting the pace in the respondents' field or industry.
And I have to say, I was a little surprised last year to see this driver rank as highly as it did then, and it's high again this year. And, you know, I think this is because of the competitive pressures that organizations feel. It's hard to stand out in the market for continuing education and professional development. So if you're not seen as somebody who's sort of setting the pace in your field or industry, it's going to be hard to attract and convert those learners that are going to contribute to your financial sustainability and profitability.
Yeah, and kind of with your read of that setting the pace answer, then we can really think about those top two strategic drivers as really being existential questions. Can we bring in enough money to keep the lights on and to do what we need to do? And if we're not seen as setting the pace in our field or industry, how long can we remain relevant and continue to exist?
Indeed. And I think this is particularly applicable to our association listeners. As an association, you want to be seen as that leader in your field or industry. It's a brand thing. And it's not just related to education, it's related to membership. Are people going to come and even join if you're not seen as setting the pace?
The third most popular strategic driver was support workforce development. 56.5% of respondents chose that. And here again, I think we see pretty neat alignment with the strategic goals. The second most popular primary strategic goal choice was strengthening alignment with workforce needs.
And this really was heartening for me. I feel like we're finally starting to see a lot more visible focus on workforce development and tightly aligning educational offerings and credentialing with employer needs. Even if you're selling primarily to individual customers or individual members, it's often the employers who foot the bill for participation in education. So if they don't see the value in what you're doing, it's unlikely that you're going to be selling to that individual. And of course, we're seeing more focus now on business-to-business or B2B selling and going directly to the employer and saying, hey, use us.
Yeah, and Jeff, you've made the point before that the employer often still has to support the individual learner, even if the learner is the one paying, the one footing that bill and not the employer. I mean, the learner may have to take time off work to be able to go to a conference or attend a seminar or complete that online course. So if an employer isn't supportive or makes it hard to do that, then it makes it hard to sell even in that direct-to-consumer, you know, B2C situation.
Right. Now, the fourth most cited strategic driver is evolving learner demands. 51.9% selected that. We were just talking about the importance of speaking to employers and speaking to their needs. This driver is about the learner needs.
Yeah, I think individual learners now have many more choices than they did a decade ago, even just half a decade ago. And they also tend to have a greater need for flexibility in terms of scheduling or perhaps in terms of formats. The pandemic got them used to doing things online. So this strategic driver of evolving learner demand speaks to all of that.
Yeah, and learner demand, I think, is kind of a catch-all bucket. It's the kind of thing that we often get called in for because organizations are struggling because they have this sense that demands are evolving, but what does that really mean? What do they need to offer? Do learners want micro-learning? Do they want micro-credentials? Do they want cohort-based learning? And you got to figure that out and be able to evolve as a learning business with those evolving learner demands.
Running a learning business today requires attention to growing reach, generating revenue, and demonstrating real impact, all while navigating constant change and fierce competition for learners' time and money.
To help, we've curated a collection of free resources for learning business professionals. You'll find frameworks, briefings, and reports, webinars, and tools focused on strategy, portfolio design, pricing, marketing, and more, all created specifically for organizations that sell continuing education and professional development.
If you care about building a stronger, more sustainable learning business, visit leadinglearning.com/free resources.
That's leadinglearning.com/free resources for practical tools and strategic insight to help you grow your reach, revenue, and impact.
After asking about strategic goals for 2026 and then the drivers behind those goals, we asked about 8 trends and issues and how important those are for learning businesses in 2026 and how they're informing their strategy. And we used a 5-point scale. So respondents who said that something was critical, we assigned that 5 points. Very important was translated to 4 points, down to not important, 1 point. And that allowed us then to get a weighted average. And so here are the 8 trends and issues that we asked about. 1, artificial intelligence. 2, workforce and employer needs. 3, learner preferences for flexibility. 4, personalized learning. 5, increased competition. 6, growth in alternative credentialing, so things like micro-credentials and digital badges. And 7th, virtual and or hybrid events, so things that are entirely online or partially online. And then 8th, we asked about diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility, DEIA.
And so out of that list, number 1 was workforce and employer needs. I got a 3.77 weighted average in the responses. The next 2, learner preferences for flexibility, which had a 3.66 weighted average, and then providing more personalized learning experiences, which had a 3.58 weighted average. And to me, those second 2 both go a long ways towards the whole learner engagement issue. How are you going to be able to create content in a way that engages with learners and meets those evolving demands that we were just talking about?
And we asked about the same set of trends and issues in our survey we did about a year before this one, and these are the same top 3 as the previous year. So these really seem to sort of be at the crux of what learning businesses are focusing on. Now, when I ran through that list of 8, you might remember that at the top was artificial intelligence, but AI is not on that list of top trends and issues that we just touched on.
No, it did not make the top 3, though we are seeing in general that the AI dial has moved in some areas. Still, in my opinion, we're lagging on how well we're engaging with and using AI. Around 40% of respondents say that they're having internal discussions about AI, but they don't have a clear implementation plan. Another roughly 10% say they're not even discussing AI currently. So that's half of the overall responding audience essentially doing nothing with AI at this point, or nothing really substantive other than talking about it.
Now, we did see almost 20% of respondents say that they are in early stages of AI implementation, so things like pilots. That's pretty significant, a fifth of respondents doing something. And then 16.7% say they're using AI in some offerings, and 6.9% say they're using it in most or all offerings. And both of those are up compared to last year.
Yeah, up a pretty good bit, you know, percentage-wise. So that's encouraging somewhat. But clearly, there's room for a lot more engagement with AI at this point.
We also asked about challenges around maintaining or growing enrollments and registrations. We heard very clearly that revenue is an issue and a focus. If you're a learning business, the way you're going to grow or maintain revenue is through enrollments and registrations. So we wanted to ask, what are the things holding learning businesses back, or the things that they're worried about holding them back? Again, we provided some predefined choices, 8 of them, and then also a none of these, something else answer option. And in this case, respondents could pick up to 3 options. So we'll touch on the top 4 challenges to maintaining or growing enrollments and registrations. And all 4 of these were selected by over a third of the respondents.
And I'll put these into 2 buckets. One is a capacity slash structural bucket, and the other is a market bucket. So going in that capacity bucket, the top challenge identified was insufficient internal resources. So, you know, staff or budget, 45.3% said that. The other challenge in that capacity bucket, which may be a sort of a subset of the first one, is limited marketing resources. 39.3% said that.
So then the other two challenges go in your market bucket, Jeff. Pricing challenges were also cited by 39.3%, so the same number who cited limited marketing resources. You know, and this gets to that difficult question of how do you price yourself out there in a very competitive market? I mean, that's clearly a question on respondents' minds.
And then the fourth challenge, also going in that market bucket, points to the very competitive market situation. Increased competition was the fourth challenge. 35.3% of respondents indicated that. So existing in a competitive market, not quite knowing how to price, and with limited marketing resources and insufficient internal resources, kind of summarizes the challenges that organizations are seeing.
Now, we also asked a forward-looking question about where learning businesses plan to invest in 2026. Again, we gave some predefined choices, 10 of those, and folks could pick up to three, and we'll share the top four areas of planned investment.
Number one was increasing learner engagement. So 41.1% said this, and that dovetails well with the earlier focus on evolving learner demands.
The second most popular area of planned investment is enhancing marketing and outreach efforts. So 35.2% said they'll be investing there. You know, we were just talking about limited marketing resources as a challenge. So, you know, this clearly kind of responds to that. But I do think it's worth noting that the marketing and outreach efforts last year was a much more popular choice. This year, about 35%, as I just said. Last year, almost 59%. So maybe we can just do a little armchair analysis on what might be behind that drop.
Yeah, may as well. But, you know, it's hard to say. It could be a glitch because these are non-statistical surveys. It could be because people spent marketing money last year, didn't get the results they wanted, and so aren't putting as much into it this year. Or maybe they're not being given the budget to invest in it in 2026. But marketing and outreach may be tied in some ways to the next area of investment, which is increasing efforts to partner with other organizations. 31.7% indicated that. And the survey didn't ask about what underlies that partnering or why they're looking to partner, but I suspect that many organizations are partnering because they want to expand their reach and get to new customers that may be represented by the partner's audience. So respondents may be looking to partnering as a way to expand reach rather than direct investment in what would typically be thought of as marketing and outreach efforts.
The same number of respondents who chose partnering chose providing personalized learning experiences as a top area of investment, 31.7%. This again speaks to the fact that learners have more and more options and their needs and preferences are evolving. Their expectations for flexibility are changing. And that's what personalized learning is all about. It's about making sure that the learner is getting the right content in the right format at the right time.
Let's turn to the first of three themes and takeaways from the data and our analysis of it. One of the themes has to do with mission and margin. And this emerged out of interviews we did with 27 association CEOs about the role of learning in education.
Right. There's often a tension and sometimes actual confusion about the role of education and learning in mission and margin when it comes to the products and services in the portfolio. This is particularly applicable for association learning businesses, but there are other learning businesses that are also mission-driven. So if you're a mission-driven organization of any type, then you're going to have two dimensions along which you can assess products in your portfolio. One of those dimensions is the contribution to mission. How well does that product support what you're trying to do and why you exist?
And the other dimension is sustainable net revenue. Is that product actually profitable? Is it able to bring in a net margin consistently? So this mission margin question is an essential tension that maybe doesn't get made as explicit as it needs to be when organizations are thinking about product decisions and how they're going to invest and what the challenges are. If you have products that really aren't generating much revenue and also aren't really contributing to your mission in a measurable way, then you really need those out of your portfolio, to be honest. And I know there are people listening that if they're honest with themselves, they've got those in their portfolios and they know that they need to be gotten rid of.
And we encourage you to access the Where Mission and Margin Meet executive briefing that has a visual of this matrix that maps out these two dimensions that we're talking about here. It's a very simple tool, but it can help you plot where different products or product lines in your portfolio fit. Jeff, what you were just talking about there is the lower left quadrant. Mm-hmm. Those are things that need to be retired or redesigned. That's where the product has weak connection to mission and also weak revenue associated with it.
Right. You know, but organizations probably also have some things in their portfolio that are solidly about mission, but aren't really generating much revenue. And you have to say, can you look at those and figure out how you might get them to generate a little bit more revenue if you really, you know, apply some disciplined thinking? Possibly you're in the position of having some things, on the other hand, that are generating quite a lot of revenue for you, but don't really have that much to do with your mission. So with those, you might want to ask, can we, for example, spin them off and get some cash that you can invest back into the products that are more aligned with mission?
And then, of course, there are the sweet spot offerings. These are the products that deliver on mission and generate strong net positive revenue.
I think most organizations are lucky if they've got, say, 20% of their portfolio in the upper right of the matrix where that sweet spot is. You know, so can you find more of those products? And to the extent that you've got them, can you strengthen your investment in them and get more out of them?
One way to potentially find more products that will fit in that upper right sweet spot, if you're mapping your offerings out on this matrix, one way to maybe do that is by making sure that you're using what we call your credibility capital.
And we talked earlier about organizations, you know, wanting to be seen as setting the pace or leading their market. A lot of what makes that possible is having a high level of credibility in your market. So being seen as the authoritative source, as a trusted source. And that's typically tied to specific assets that you have as an organization. I'm thinking particularly of associations when I say this, but this can apply to any type of learning business that has intellectual property, which most do, or other types of capital. And this includes things like standards and guidelines that you've created, credentials you've created that really have market value to them, accreditations potentially for the businesses and other organizations that are in your sphere, specialized research you produce, market data that you're known as the source for, even your ability to convene the right people around the issues and challenges and opportunities in your marketplace, being recognized as the advocate for the challenges and issues and opportunities in your marketplace. All of these are potentially parts of your credibility capital.
And we asked in the survey how closely respondents feel their portfolio of offerings is aligned with their areas of authority, aka that credibility capital that you were just talking about, Jeff. And 30.9% of respondents said that they feel their portfolio is fully aligned with their areas of authority. And 49.3% said they were mostly aligned. Now, that may sound pretty good at first blush, but we think that fully aligned group needs to be bigger.
Yeah. And I think also there could be a little bit of curse of knowledge going on here. There's the potential for respondents to be overrating their alignment from their perspective of inside the organization, that the person responding is thinking, yeah, of course, we're supporting our standards and our credentials and everything else. But that's from their perspective. From the market's perspective, that alignment and the strength of that alignment may be much less clear.
And as we talked about in our last episode around the associations as architects of learning, this is kind of another example of a not bleeding at the neck issue. There we were talking about it in terms of kind of, you know, a lot of education businesses kind of running along fine, but maybe not great. Same thing here. You're mostly aligned, but not fully aligned. Mostly aligned can actually be a very dangerous place to be because it can almost feel like justification to keep doing the same things. This is sort of the, if it's not broken, don't fix it mindset. But if you were more fully aligned, what might that mean in terms of revenue and in terms of contribution to your mission? I mean, this is a place where you want to be thinking about coherence and discipline. I mean, once you know what you're supposed to do, be ruthless about doing it and not doing other things. You know, so to go back to the matrix, I mean, if you want to be in that upper right quadrant with those sweet spot offerings, what does that mean? It probably means you need to get rid of some things that should have been sunset long ago and you just haven't gotten around to. When you've got lean teams, when you've got tight resources, when you have a highly competitive market, the way you're going to be able to do what you need to do to have those sweet spot offerings is by being disciplined and focused and by being fully aligned.
The final takeaway we'll share today has to do with confidence and in particular, a confidence gap that we feel we're seeing. We asked respondents about this in a couple of areas, starting with confidence in achieving their top strategic goals.
And less than a quarter said that they were very confident or extremely confident in achieving their strategic goals. Now, Jeff, you and I are the kind of people who think that strategy is the basis of everything. We believe you need a clear strategy and you need a clear plan of execution to achieve that strategy. So if one of those two is missing or weak, you don't have confidence in achieving your strategic goals.
Which is not the place you want to be in, obviously. So it's definitely a place to apply some discipline, as you said, Salisa, and make sure that you really do have strategic clarity, that you've considered your trade-offs, that you're focused on what really is important, and that you're confident around your execution on it.
We also asked survey respondents about confidence in meeting revenue expectations in 2026, meaning specifically revenue expectations for education and learning products. Remember, top primary strategic goal was increasing revenue. So how confident are you in achieving what is, for many of these learning businesses, their top strategic priority? And again, we have under a quarter who are extremely or very confident. And in both cases, we have tiny slices who are extremely confident. So our suggestion is to do what it takes to increase your confidence, to close that confidence gap.
Now, of course, this may not be representative of you and your learning business, but I think it is a good thought experiment. Think about how confident you are in achieving your strategic goals and in meeting revenue expectations. And if you and your team aren't very confident, then why? What can you change? What can you perhaps invest in? What can you maybe stop doing? You know, finding those trade-offs that you need to make. What is it that you need to do to grow your confidence, to close that confidence gap? And these are, of course, connected very tightly. You know, if you're not likely to have confidence in meeting your revenue expectations, if you don't have confidence that you actually have a strong strategy in place that you're capable of executing against well, if you've got that in place, then it should follow from that that you're going to be in a good place to meet your revenue expectations. There are going to be wrinkles, of course. You know, every strategy, once it actually hits the market, is subject to change. But if you've had some rigor, if you've had some discipline in looking at the data, understanding your market and your situation, making those trade-offs and developing the strategy, it should follow that you'll be confident in meeting the revenue expectations that go with that strategy.
We encourage you to check out the report, The Strategic Outlook for Association Learning Businesses 2026, which we did based on the association-focused slice of data from this survey. You can visit the show notes at leadinglearning.com/episode469 to get a link to that report.
And we'll also ask that if you access this report, look at this data, find it useful, that you put a little note on your calendar for around next September or so when you see this survey come out again. Because the reason we're able to do this is because people generously give their time to participate in the survey. It takes between 10 and 15 minutes, and it yields data that's really useful to learning businesses. And that's our audience, of course. So For those of you, if you're listening and you did participate in the survey that's behind this report, we're truly grateful for that. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And if you didn't get the chance to participate in 2025, again, we hope you'll make that note to participate in 2026 when it comes back around.
Be sure to visit leadinglearning.com/episode469. There you'll find a link to the two publications we mentioned in this episode, the executive briefing based on interviews with association CEOs and the strategic outlook for association learning businesses 2026. You'll also find show notes, a transcript, and options for subscribing to the podcast.
If you enjoy the Leading Learning Podcast, please share this episode or another with a colleague or coworker you feel would appreciate and get value from it. And please spread the word about the executive briefing and report, too.
Thanks again, and see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.